especially interesting because in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, how does the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam open? Raise your hand. Who is the first person spoken of?
The story of Ajamil.
Ajamil. Yes, thank you. And next. So Ajamil obviously was a great devotee, Hare Krishna Nirvana Prabhu. He was a fortunate soul, but he wasn't one whose example we should follow. And who's after Prahlad? Who's after Ajamil in the sixth canto? Anyone know? Is Daksha before? Maybe Daksha was also a devotee. If I'm not mistaken, is Daksha. And then, but he's not the kind of devotee who's a pure devotee. And then there's Titraketu, and then Vritrasura, and they're all devotees, but they're not the kind of devotees who exhibit pure devotional service. Maybe, is this a little bit too loud, or is it my imagination? Yeah. Okay. And then after that, there's the Pumsa Savana Vrata, where Kashyapa Muni gives Diti, or is it Aditi, a sacrifice to perform. And that would, it was a sacrifice to Lord Vishnu that would allow Indra, so it's Aditi, to regain the kingdom. No, not, excuse me, it was Diti. She was angry at Indra, and she wanted to get rid of Indra, so she performed devotional service to get rid of Indra, and so she was performing devotional service, and then Indra, in disguise, served her, just waiting for her to make a mistake. So he was serving a devotee, but for not in the right consciousness to attain the actual result of devotional service. But yet everyone, and this is the remarkable thing about those final two chapters of the sixth canto, that everyone was benefited just by performing devotional service. But none of those who were performing devotional service and were benefited got the actual result of devotional service, which is prema bhakti. And actually, Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha describes how misra bhakti, or bhakti that's mixed, not anya abhilasita sunyam, not pure devotional service, but misra bhakti, bhakti that's mixed with other desires, doesn't give the fruit of bhava bhakti, which is the precursor to prema bhakti. But yet, devotional service in any form brings great results, but it doesn't bring the actual result that is the goal of our existence, to learn to love Krishna, to relearn to love Krishna, to be situated again in our relationship with Krishna. So then, because the examples of the other devotees in the sixth canto are not examples to be followed, then the next canto, the seventh canto, is basically all about Prahlad Maharaj, and of course Lord Nisringadev. But we don't want to say, of course, Lord Nisringadev, as if he's not important or something like that. But really it's about Prahlad, because the instructions are those that we should follow. If conditional clause, if we actually want to develop our love for Krishna. And if I ask everyone, what do you want? We'd all say Krishna Prema, naturally, and we go, Jai Krishna Prema. But to actually follow the the path of pure devotional service, it's very confronting, I find. It's very confronting because when I try to act in the way that is pure, what I'm confronted with is my lack of sincerity on the path, and it's very, on a good day, it's humbling, and on a bad day, it's discouraging, in a sense. But yet, that's part of the process. I'd like to read some, we won't be able to read very much because this is an Alone with Krishna adventure, which in one sense is the great adventure of life, the path of devotional service, and ultimately what happens is between us and Krishna. Of course, everyone wants blessings, and please give me your blessings, please give me your blessings, please give me your blessings. And what people usually mean by that, please give me your blessings so I don't really have to do very much and still get the result. And of course, when one's motives are, if you want cheap blessings like that, you get cheap blessings. You don't get what you want at all. One time, His Holiness Guru Raj Maharaj sent me a reflection by a devotee who was there with Prabhupada when this occurred, and in India, some person, as almost everyone does, please give me your blessings, went to Prabhupada and said, please give me your blessings. And usually, I personally didn't see Prabhupada react to that. But at least on this occasion, this is how he reacted. He first went like this. And he said, I have more than 100 temples all over the world. And in each of them, there are so many issues, there are so many problems. And all the leaders of those temples, they write to me with those problems. If you want my blessings, please take some of this headache off of me. So Krishna consciousness, it's easy in one sense. And when one really feels connected to Krishna in service, it's always going to be blissful. But it's not going to be all Jai Prabhu Haribo. It's not quite like that, like Arjuna had to undergo. Look what he had to do. I can't even imagine. I'm not a Kshatriya like Arjuna, what to speak of a devotee like Arjuna, but Krishna asked him to fight with his relatives and kill them all. I mean, we read the Bhagavad Gita and we've read it many times, so that doesn't strike us as quite an exceptional, amazing thing, but when you think about what he was asked to do, it was quite... And not to do it to gain anything, not even a percentage. And I see that there's such a tendency, like for when any money passes through my hands or anything, there's always a tendency to want to take something out of it, some percentage, even if it's a small percentage, but I want something out of it, to give a class, and at least someone should say, what a nice class you give, or something like that, some prestige, some ego gratification. But that's not what Krishna consciousness is about. It's about letting everything other than the pleasure of serving Krishna pass through us and offered and seen as mercy, and not taking anything for oneself, then what's the motivation for doing anything if I'm not supposed to take anything for me? Maybe there's no motivation if I don't get anything out of it, but actually we do get the greatest thing out of it. And it's the only way to get this greatest thing is that we please Krishna. And please, Krishna. And that's, and Prabhupada was so radical too, because radical meaning he spoke the truth and didn't flatter, and he would say there's no other purpose in life. It's the only duty you have in life is to develop your love for Krishna. He was so straightforward and so demanding in that sense. And I understood from that, and I understood it actually relatively recently in a very clear way. Perhaps eventually I'll start reading what I'm supposed to, what I was hoping to read, but that one devotee, Bhrigupati Prabhu, who's a scholar, Sanskrit scholar and a devotee, he's translating Hari Bhakti Vilas from Sanskrit into English. And he said, Vaishnava Sanatana Goswami and Srila Gopalbhatta Goswami, and he said the way of teaching in Hari Bhakti Vilas, they say, and this was the Vedic style, they don't say it directly, but they give the ideal. The ideal. And they don't even tell you why you have to do it. But they just quote Shastra and say, this is what's to be done. And they don't even tell why. And at least the Western mind, or those who have been educated in the scientific way of thinking, they won't do anything unless they hear why I have to do it. And so much of why has to do with I have to be convinced Shastra isn't sufficient, even. And what's at the end? Krishna. And Krishna's pleasure, when one reads the third canto of the Bhagavatam, one reads how when the four Kumaras go to Vaikuntha, there's a description prior to them entering and being confronted by the gatekeepers who say, you cannot enter. And it describes how the beauty of Vaikuntha and the plants of Vaikuntha, and out of all the fragrant and wonderful plants, it is Tulsi Devi who is the most pleasing to Krishna. And then it describes how no one is envious of Tulsi Devi. That's exactly the opposite of the material world. When someone is most of anything, he's got unlimited enemies. People who are envious of his position. But in Vaikuntha, especially envy is absent. And for the same reason, the devotees have as their goal not exactly love for Krishna. Yes, that's the goal, but when taking it in a more specific way, the love for Krishna, that the love of the gopis, say, for Krishna, and the love of Srimati Radharani has for Krishna. Nadini Shakti Asmad. But that's, to have that love isn't the goal. I once, in Vrindavan, many, many, many years ago, I was invited, I had an official position, so I was invited to go to a Rasalila performance in Vrindavan. And so the pastime, so I attended, and the pastime was Sisi Radhakrishna was sitting on a throne, and the gopis were there, and they were performing different dramas for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. So they were performing dramas about the pastimes of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. So Radha and Krishna are watching this, and the gopis are performing dramas about Radha and Krishna and their dealings. And the dramas were wonderful, and they depicted in such a wonderful way the dealings between Radha and Krishna and their different activities. So at the end, the gopis came before Radha Krishna sitting on the throne, and Srimati Radharani was so happy and pleased with them, because because it evoked so much ecstasy within them to see these dealings being performed. And out of her happiness, because happiness, and when you're happy, you can give. You can give, and you want to give. When one is not happy and satisfied, one just wants to take. Or if one is forced to give, you know, one just, okay. But Srimati Radharani was so unlimitedly happy. She wanted to give, so she said to the gopis, I'll give you anything you want. What do you want? And in this drama, they looked at her and said, we want Shyam. It was like, you know, Radhe, Radhe, Shyam, Radhe. Move out of the way, Radharani, here I am. That is not our philosophy, because it puts one in competition with Srimati Radharani, who's the object of service for everyone, because she's the one who can give Krishna pleasure. No envy in the spiritual world. So we didn't like that so-called Rasalila performance very much. So in the spiritual world, there's no envy. Srila Narottama Das Thakur describes envy. Having envy is like having a spear in the heart. Can one be happy with a spear in the heart? Of course not. So to remove the envy is the process of Krishna consciousness. It's to give ourselves to Krishna. Krishna bole se jeev anadi bahimuk. Instead of having our back turned to Krishna, which is completely unnatural, which is completely unsatisfying, and which causes so much anxiety, imagining that I'm in the center of things. And the process is to put Krishna in the center and not serve him because, okay, I have to serve Krishna, all right, I'll do it. But to serve because one falls in love with Krishna, because he's the most wonderful of all persons. Yes. So Prahlad is teaching by his example, and in the next chapter, in the 10th chapter, he says that I've come to this world to show the example of a pure devotee. In the 6th canto, there was devotion, but it wasn't in a way that we can follow. And we can't imitate Prahlad, but the principles of his life and his prayers or something that we can understand very deeply, and then make our choices as best we can as to how we want to live our life and what do we really want in our life, which is really the topic of the Alone with Krishna adventure. When we conceived of this, when we conceived of this Alone with Krishna activity, the basic idea was that everyone is so busy, whether one is busy with one's family or one's work, or even if one's living in the temple, or everyone is so busy with one's duties in life and services that one generally lacks the time. And sometimes when we have the time, we don't have the mind to do it. It's to extract some time in our life where we can sit alone and examine how we are doing in our spiritual life. And what I really want out of life. And am I watering the wrong weeds, the wrong plants, thinking they're the bhakti lata, but there's weeds growing. Labha puja pratishtati jata upasakagan. And then ihan mali nitya sechi. We're supposed to be watering our devotional kripa with the water of hearing and chanting. But if it's weeds, if we're watering the weeds, which is one of the most wildest things that happened to me in my life, is that when Zagtrini Mataji and I first went to Hong Kong, we didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. I mean, not that we know much now, perhaps, but someone, we went to a local Hindu temple and they gave us a tulsi, and we were staying in some guest house room with no windows and we didn't know what we were doing. And it was the winter in Hong Kong and we were trying to care for it. We were watering it, and we suddenly saw that it had no more leaves, and then one little plant was growing. So for maybe 1 month or a month and a half, we thought the tulsi had died, and we were watering that little weed for 2 months, and it grew so nicely. Namo nama. Now I can sort of laugh about it, but when we understood that it wasn't tulsi, certainly I felt very foolish, because it wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what I wanted. So the water that was meant for tulsi, of hearing and chanting, just made this weed grow luxuriantly. It was doing well. Healthy, green, full of leaves. But it was a weed. Labha puja pratishta dijata. The upasaka means weed. And the very interesting thing about, one of the many interesting things about devotional service, is that Krishna is so kind. He's going to give us what we want. If we want labha, some material benefit, puja, someone to worship me thinking I'm great, pratishta, praise, adi, and all the rest that can come along, that does come along, that will come along, especially nowadays. Krishna will give you that if that's what you want. Krishna will give me that if that's what I want. And there's a part of me that does want these things. That's the problem, the insincerity, the weeds. So, anya abhilashita sanyam jnana karma anavrita. Do I want to become a great Sanskrit scholar and be able to quote 1,000 verses? There are great devotees in Vaishnava Sampradayas that know every verse by heart in the Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses. And there's this one devotee who's blind, and you can just imagine, and he knows every verse in the Bhagavatam, and you can just imagine in his last life, he just decided, I just don't want to be distracted. I just want to study the Bhagavatam and hear it. In his next life, he takes his birth blind, and he has people reading to him all the time. His Sanskrit is perfect. He has a perfect memory, undistracted, focused, that's going to give results, that kind of focus. And that's one of the points that's going to come up if I ever can get started. Too cold. So This is after Hiranyakashipu has been killed. The great saint Narada Muni continued. The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods, dared not come forward before the Lord, who at that time, after killing Hiranyakashipu, was extremely angry. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and we can't imagine, but since Krishna is unlimited beauty, strength, power, knowledge, everything unlimited, and his anger is also unlimited. Would you like to be confronted with unlimited anger? Even the greatest of demigods were terrified. So they asked, the goddess of fortune was requested to go before the Lord because she knew him. She stayed by his chest continuously. All the demigods said, you go before him, because out of fear they could not do so. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. She couldn't do it, get near him. And thereafter Lord Brahma requested Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing very near him, my dear son, Lord Nisringadev is extremely angry at your demoniac father. Please go forward and appease the Lord. When Prabhupada spoke on this verse, he said Lord Brahma was saying something in a sense that was funny. He's saying that since he came to save, Lord Nisringadev came to save you, it's your fault that he's so angry, so you have to go and pacify him. Please, my dear son, please go forward and appease the Lord. Narada Muni, who was narrating this whole event, because in the first chapter in the seventh canto, it's about a discussion between Narada Muni and Yudhisthira Maharaj, and that goes the entire chapter to the very end, the 15th chapter. It's a discussion between Narada Muni and Yudhisthira Maharaj. So Narada Muni continued describing, O King, although the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj was only a little boy, he accepted Lord Brahma's words. He gradually proceeded toward Lord Nisringadev and fell down to offer his respectful obeisances with folded hands. When Lord Nisringadev saw the small boy Prahlad Maharaj prostrated, full of obeisances at the soles of his lotus feet, he became most ecstatic and affectionate towards his devotee, and that's the nature of Krishna. Krishna in the form of Lord Nisringadev. But that's the nature of Krishna. The devotees in Braj are so powerful because of the purity of their love, because of the completeness of their love. They're so powerful. They control Krishna completely. People inside want to be the supreme, the object of everyone's affection. They have envy of Krishna. But the devotees in Braj, they have more than that. They completely control him, the Supreme Lord. Napariyeham. They conquer him. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Krishna himself, he's the Vishaya, the object of the love, so he can't understand what it's like from the point of view of he's the Ashraya. He's the Vishaya. He can't himself understand the object of love. He can't understand what it's like to be the Ashraya, the source of that love. So he comes, Krishna comes as Mahaprabhu to experience Radharani's love for him, and what qualities does he have that evokes that kind of love? And what is the bliss that she experiences that causes that kind of love? He wanted to taste that. That's Krishna. He's Bhakta Vatsali Atma Prasanta Vedanyata. He's controlled by his devotees. That is his pleasure. So he became most ecstatic in affection towards his devotee. He raised Prahlad, who was paying his obeisances. The Lord placed his lotus hand on the boy's head, because his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all his devotees. What does that mean to you? His hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all his devotees. What does that mean to you? Raise your hand if you care to answer. Yes, Sri Chaitanya.
The Lord always protects you.
If we can, yeah. Anyone else? Yes. Yes.
Surrender.
Surrender. The surrender of the devotees makes one fearless. Yes. That's our natural position in relationship to Krishna. Dependent and fearless because of his protection. Now, when we're alone with Krishna, we can think about that and what are my anxieties in life and how much am I depending on Krishna and how much am I depending on me. Things like that. And then what we do is we write and privately examine our lives. How much am I actually dependent on Krishna? How am I developing? Is my love for Krishna developing? Am I doing it just to please Krishna, or do I get my percentages? How is my chanting? We hear Hari Nama, Hari Nama Eva Kevalam Kalo Anasteva Kalo Tadadi Kirtanam. How is my chanting? Krishna is no different from his names. How is my chanting? Do I become happy to read about Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita? Do I get life from that? How is my service? Is it done for Krishna? What percentages do I get? This is the kind of thing that I was hoping to create a container of time where devotees can examine their life, their devotional life, and see if any adjustments, if they want to make any adjustments, and then how to make those adjustments, etc. His hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees, all of his devotees, all of his devotees. How does it, when you hear that, what do you think? What do you think? You. What's your name, Prabhu? Sorry.
Me?
No, you. No matter how many times you look behind your rooms. What do you think when you hear that? Yeah, sorry, I shouldn't do this, but I did it anyway, sorry. What do you think when you hear that? His hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees.
Mercy of Krishna.
Yeah?
Compassion.
That's the mercy of Krishna's compassion. Anyone else? What do you think? Yeah.
the first part, it's suggesting that Krishna is there waiting for us, just watching and waiting, and the fact that he's always ready. So it's kind of makes me think that we're just me. I'm doing whatever I'm doing, but Krishna's there waiting for an opportunity to bless.
And okay, let's take that one step further. This is the kind of thing we hoping we think about, and then what? So you know that, like if your wife is waiting for you, you know you better get there quick. So naturally, you think, how long should I keep him waiting, or something like that. I mean, I just took it to a next level step. Anyone else? I saw you raised your hands. Yeah.
So if Krishna's hand is on us, then we'll definitely be fearless. So it is the both way around. So, and if we are fearless, then if we are getting fearless, then it means that what we are doing is right, and Krishna is being merciful on us.
Or alternatively, we're just living in a dream. That's, well, which is it? Well, that's something you can ask yourself. And because if you feel this, yeah, you're going to be tested. And that's what life is, a life of devotional service. That's why we don't just sit. That's one of the reasons we don't just sit alone and do our bhajan, imagining that we're great devotees, but we interact, service and interaction. So that we can test things like that. Self-assessment. Life is meant for self-assessment. Tests are made for self-assessment. That I can see how I'm actually doing. Am I actually fearless? And that will come if I know I'm really doing it for Krishna, and I know that Krishna is really protecting me, and my faith will be strong. But by engaging in service, we find out how we're doing. What do you think about that point of view? Anyone else? How does it make you feel? Now what to do? Three of my dearest friends raised their hand at the same time. Four of I'm going to call on someone else. Well, that would be, no, then I'm really in trouble. Then I would say that one's not my greatest friend. I'm going to just stop while I'm there, so I don't get myself in trouble. I'll tell you what I thought of is, I would like to become a devotee. That was my thought. So by the touch of Lord Nityanandadev's hand on Prahlad Maharaj's head, Prahlad was completely freed of all material contaminations and desires. And yet when Prabhupada speaks about it, this, he says he's already nitya siddha, he's already eternally liberated. And yet, here in the verse, it says that he's completely free by the touch of the Lord. And that's really why we're supposed to always be in a devotional mood, no matter what we're doing in life, whether we're working or serving the deity, is because we want, or chanting, we want to keep our consciousness in touch with Krishna. Kirtaniya Sadhari, so our consciousness is always in touch with Krishna. Because if we're not in touch with the internal energy, we'll surely be in touch with the external energy, Maya. We need shelter of one or the other. As if he became freed from all material contamination, freed from all material desires. What a relief that would be, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. Therefore, he at once became transcendentally situated immediately, and all the symptoms of ecstasy immediately became manifest in his body without all the desires, without all the contaminations, the soul is naturally ecstatic. His heart filled with love for Lord Nisringadeva, for Krishna, and his eyes filled with tears. And thus, he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. And I'll read one more verse. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and his sight upon Lord Nisringadeva with full attention in complete trance. With a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers in love with a faltering voice. His voice was so filled with emotion that he couldn't speak strongly. Okay, what do you remember from that verse? Raise your hand. Yes.
The last book with fixed attention.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the point, or a point there. I'll read it again, please listen. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon Lord Nisringadeva with full attention in complete trance. And with that fixed mind, with a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers in love with a faltering voice. So the fixedness of mind allowed him to do that service of praying in a wonderful way, filled with love. Now, the word Susamahita, very attentive, without diversion to any subject. Actually, I was so struck by this fixedness of mind because I see that's so much a problem, being fixed in mind. With me, especially in japa or chanting Sunday mantras or doing service, being fixed in mind that this is out of love. What to speak of the love part, even the, because yogis can become fixed in mind. In this particular word, Susamahita is very much used in the yoga circles because that's the goal for dhyan, for meditation, for samadhi, fixedness in mind, the ability to fix your mind. But of course, as we well know, as we study Bhagavad Gita, that the strongest way to fix one's mind is when it's fixed in love. Bhakti. But what this means is su means very much sa, very much the mahita, that it means completely focused. No distraction, no flickering. Chitta vritti naroda, just completely focused. Lord Nisringadeva, in great love, with no fear, no material desires, no contamination. And therefore his prayers are so meaningful. And he's the one, as he himself was saying, Chapter 10, who's come to teach us how to be a pure devotee in this world. And he teaches, but as teachers learn when they study teaching, there's two parts, the teacher and the student. And Prabhupada has said this so many times, both must be qualified. The teacher's business is to teach, and the student's business is to learn. And too often, the teacher tries to learn the students, so to speak, and it doesn't work. As when I was teaching many years ago, I saw that because unless the desire to learn is there, the students, you can try to force their mouths open, so to speak, so that they learn what you're teaching, but learning is their business, and teaching is the teacher's business. So there's two kinds of assessments, two purposes of assessments in life, or in school, in the learning environment, is that one, the student is assessing how much he's assimilating the lessons, and the teacher is assessing how well the student is assimilating what he's trying to teach. So the assessment is both on the teacher's point, from the teacher's point of view, and also the student's point of view. But they're both assessing different things. Now, when we do this alone with Krishna, raise your hand if you've attended an alone with Krishna before. Okay, raise your hand if it's the first time. Okay, so I'll explain it very simply. And there's different levels that can be done. And what I was really thinking we would do this afternoon is the second level, but this afternoon, who knows what the Melbourne weather is going to offer us? Certainly the Bureau of Meteorology doesn't know. They're better at predicting what yesterday's weather was than today's, what to speak of tomorrow's. But let's just see how this afternoon goes. So what we do, there's a little booklet. Raise your hand if you received the booklet either in one form or another about Alone with Krishna. Okay, did you hand it out previously or sent it to?
No, we have the
No. They're supposed to get it in advance. Wait, if you hand it out now, then what do you think people are going to do? Are they going to listen to what I'm saying, or are they going to be open to see what magical things are inside? What do you think? So maybe we can just wait a moment. I'll explain part of it very quickly. That this is a special time. This is a rare time when you're going to have nothing to do and other than to be alone with Krishna. So there's things to read, shastra to read, and what we recommend is everyone, there's a process of setting up your altar, a private altar. Now if you want to go outside and do that, then it could be easier to be alone, or you could stay inside or find a sheltered place outside, or have an umbrella. Raise your hand if you brought an umbrella with you. That's the spirit. That's what I was hoping, that people would be brave. Yes, because now I have to explain everything, right? Because they haven't, devotees haven't read it, either that or they have to take the time to read. So read the booklet, it explains what to do. But you find a spot, your spot, where you're going to set up your altar. And then, do we have flowers for the devotees? No flowers. Do we have incense for the devotees? Okay. And no flowers. Next time. And we set up a little altar, and we put pictures that are dear to us on that altar. And And then, yeah, we offer a prayer to get ourselves in the right mood, because there's a transition, and that, in one sense, is the purpose of this specific class, to provide a transition between the usual way our minds work and the way that we're hoping they're going to work now, which is the right consciousness to be in, to be alone with Krishna, either assessing our own consciousness, our own how we're doing in advancing in our Krishna consciousness, or following the simple system that we provide, which you read something. We have the things for devotees to read in there, and you read something, and then you do a directed free writing. A directed free writing means that you just write, and no one, this is completely private between you and Krishna. I mean, sometimes the devotees will share parts of it, but that's up to you. And the only rule in directed free writing, as the little explanation in the book says, is that you have to keep the pen moving the entire time. Never mind grammar, never mind spelling, never mind if you're on topic or off topic. You try to find something, you read until something inspires you. And then you just start writing for 5-10 minutes and see what comes out. My line in this, because I taught writing, is that you'll be surprised how intelligent your pen is, because so many wonderful things will come out of your pen that you didn't even know that you knew. Are we providing pens, or the devotees have their own pens? And a notebook. Did the devotees brought their own notebooks? Okay. Did we ask the devotees to bring? Yeah, okay. So the directed free writing is like that. And we don't read as we often read. We read in a slow way. There's an explanation of these things in that little booklet. Prayerful reading, we called it, where you just read very slowly and trying to understand what Prabhupada and the great devotees want us to understand, like if Prabhupada was personally here, not only in his murti form, but if he was walking in, we'd jump up, we'd dance, and then he would sit on the Vyasasana, and we'd want him to speak, and then we'd want to hear instructions directly from him. So that's what we're doing when we're reading the books, or we're hearing, not to get a certain amount completed, not to give class, but taking instructions in, reading slowly, even if we read 2 lines and deeply enter into them, that's better than just reading a lot in this particular way of reading, and not, and it goes in this way and out that way. So there's prayerful reading explanations in there. And then there's some glorification of the holy names too. So the devotees basically, when they're alone with Krishna, they read Shastra, they write their realizations or their thoughts, their reflections, they chant, they pray. That's part A. And the second part, either this afternoon, or if you like, you can begin the journey in, is to see how you're doing in Krishna consciousness. Just read something, write, but especially this afternoon, I'd like to focus on that. How is my adventure and my journey towards the service of Krishna's lotus feet doing? Reflective time. And please remember, this is a very rare time. A very rare time. Because we're so busy with life. There's a Buddhist saying that if you're too busy to meditate for 15 minutes a day, then meditate for 60 minutes a day. In other words, something's wrong with your life. And that's Buddhism. We believe in nothing. That's the goal, Sanyavadi. Thank you. Okay. I assume there's plenty of questions, but I've already talked too much. And yeah, so I think we should just start. So we also do Monavrata at this time. That means no talking until the end. And when the end of the two-hour session is up, we will bang on a gong or some kotals and then come in, and then we'll tell you what to do next. So there'll be 2 hours of this. Ready or not, begin. Monavrata, no talking. And if you have a question, not sure what to do, now you can distribute the books. Then you can come and ask me. Is there a question? That's yes.
At this spirit request of devotees, if you do go inside to do your alone with Krishna, if you light your incense, please take the incense outside after you lift it, because last time people left the incense and it burned some of the furniture. So we prefer that not to happen. So you can light your incense after Krishna and then go inside.
Now, if anyone has any questions, not sure what to do, I'm sitting right here.
I've been broken speaking this time for the first time for the Alone with Krishna.
Yes.
And if you can guide him how he can do in his own way.
I've